Hello and welcome to Perek Zion, Chapter 7 of Malachim Bet. I'm Gideon Rothstein, and this is a Perek that is also well known because it too is a Haftarah. It's worth noting how much of Malachim makes its way into Haftarot, and at some point worth pausing and considering what it is about Malachim that makes it so ripe for presentation in Haftarot. In any case, Pasuk Aleph starts with the continuation of the story that we had seen yesterday. There's this famine in Shomron, and Elisha has been contacted because the king blames him for not asking for rachamim from Hashem, for not praying to Hashem. And Elisha now says, "Vayomer Elisha, Shimu dvar Hashem, komar Hashem kait machar se'asolet b'shekel, v'satayim se'arim b'shekel b'sha'ar Shomron." So Elisha says, "Listen and hear the dvar Hashem. Listen to what Hashem said." Meaning, in the end of the last paragraph, let's remember that the king has sent a malach to him, an angel to him, not an angel, a messenger to him, saying, kill Elisha, because he's all furious about the case with the woman killing her son, and having a fight about it, and wanting to kill the other woman's son. And so, the angel comes, and Elisha originally says, how can I daven to Hashem anymore? Because after all, I've davened to Hashem, and you guys are just terrible. But now he says, so Shimu Dvar Hashem, hear the words of Hashem, that tomorrow, this time tomorrow, so this time tomorrow, and remember we had early learned that the heads of donkeys were expensive in Shomron at the time, this time tomorrow you'll be able to get a sa'ah of flour for a shekel and two sa'ah of barley, because barley is cheaper because it's not yet flour, for a shekel in the gates of Shomron. So, Pasuk Bet, Vayana Shalisha Shalamelech Nish'an Al Yado, the officer, whose part of whose job was that the king leaned on him, so he's the right-hand man, literally. And we get the phrase, because this guy is a very close confidant of the king, because he is who the king relies on to lean on physically, and presumably from there, from the physical leaning to a more ideological leaning, to relying upon him. And he answers, "Elisha Elokim vayomar, hinei Hashem oseh arubot bashamayim," God can make windows in the heavens, "hayeh davar hazeh," would it really happen that way? If Hashem made windows in the heaven, would it end up being that way? So the Radak says, and windows in the heavens to make it rain. So to make it rain, you understand why it's a problem, because even if it rains, it's not yet going to reduce the prices so much, because after the rain, you would still need to grow the wheat and to grow the grain and then harvest it and then make it into food. But the Radak also says, "Obederech haflaga lo rid chitimus orim al derech yiridat haman." Even if Hashem, and then it's an exaggeration, it's hyperbole. What? If Hashem made windows in the heavens to rain down wheat and barley like he did with the man. That's what the Radak is reading it. So that second reading in the Radak is a problem because that suggests that this Shalish is remembering the miracle of the man and saying, even if Hashem did that, it wouldn't reduce the prices so much. But that's strange, because if Hashem did that, if there was now plentiful food, you'd think the price would come down, unless the Radak means that the man came down a day's worth at a time. So if Hashem rained down enough man for a day, enough wheat or barley for a day's worth at a time, that would not yet reduce the prices. But theoretically, Hashem could just rain down, if he believes in the man and Hashem's ability to rain down food, then there's no reason why he would have doubted this. So I suspect it's one of the first two options, that Hashem, he's thinking, even if Hashem makes windows to make it rain, we're not going to reduce the prices that much. I think he might even have thought, even if Hashem makes it that they run away, that they lift the siege, it won't reduce the prices that much, because you'll still have to spend some time getting the materials again. You have to make up for the famine that you had. Even if the cause of the famine goes away, the siege, you still have to make up, and it'll take some time. And I guess Elisha's answer is, "Vayomer hincha ro'eh be'inecha u'misham lo tochel." You will see it with your eyes and not be allowed to eat from it, not manage to eat from it. That's in that incident. So Elisha is at home. He's being blamed by the king for not having prayed enough for the Jewish people, for the people of Shomron. King sends a messenger to him. Gives off this prophecy. Tomorrow the prices will be lowered tremendously. The Shalish doesn't believe it, and the Shalish is warned that he will not see it. There were four people, Mitzoraim, sitting in the gates of the city, and they say to each other, what's the point of sitting here until we die? So, interestingly, Interestingly, Rashi comments on Petach Hashad. They're sitting there, and this is based on Chazal. Chazal say, who are these four people? They were Gehazi and his sons. And why were they sitting outside the gates of the city? They're sitting outside the gates of the city because they are Mitzoraim. They are lepers, and the halacha is, as Rashi says, that you have to leave. And so I think Galach is walled cities, and Shimon is a walled city at the time. And therefore, you have to leave where you are and sit outside the gates of the city. Again, the reason to notice that is because it means that the people of Shimon, when it came to the laws of Tzara'at, were observing them. When it comes to other laws, when it comes to idol worship, when it comes to this and this and this, they're not observing them. So it's another example of watching people being strict about some areas of halacha, even as they are flagrantly violating others that are perhaps more central. It's also, Chazal see these Arba Anashim, and they see them as Mitzoraim, as being Gehazi and his sons, and we know that Gehazi and his sons become Mitzoraim, because it says so in the earlier Psukim, but the reason that Chazal would put it in there, so years ago I remember one of my Rebbeim, Rav Bick, pointing out or suggesting that Chazal just liked having characters be all the same, having the minimum number of characters. He said it's almost as if they had only a few actors, and they wanted as many actors as possible to fill as many roles, as few actors as possible to fill as many roles as possible. But I think that was a lighthearted comment. Here, I would wonder whether Chazal watched the incident here and assumed that it took some people of some standing, of some spiritual abilities, to recognize what's going on and to be aware of what's going on. But it's not clear why Chazal did it. But theoretically, that's one possibility. Gehazi and his sons, for all that Elisha gets angry at him and kicks him out and he loses his ability to be one of the Bnei Nevi'im, this goes back to what I said before, that if Gehazi is as bad as Chazal make him seem, you have to wonder why Elisha took him in. So it's possible that Gehazi is this more complex person. He has two sides to him, and that here, as we watch them, the fact that they became the vehicle of letting Hashem's salvation be known to the Jewish people is a reflection of this two-sidedness to them. They become Mitzrayim forever, and they're kicked out, but yet they're also the vehicle for the news of the salvation. So Pasuk Dalet, what are they saying to each other? Why we sit here if we die? Ima marnu navo ha'ir v'harav ba'ir v'amanu v'amanu sham v'im yashavnu po v'amanu v'ataluchu v'niplai al machane aram im yichayunu nichye v'im yimitunu maman. So they say, if we go into the city and there's famine in the city, now I don't know if the city would let them in, but let's say, if they would go into the city and there's famine in the city and we die, so we'll die there. And if we stay here, we're going to die here because they have no food there either. So they say, so let us go into the Machane Aram, surrender to the Aramean camp, and if they kill us, it's no different. And if they let us live, then we'll live, and we'll survive. So they're expecting the Arameans or the other Arameans are there, and they're thinking that they'll just give up and see what happens. So, interestingly, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara on Daf Chavav Amud Bet. The Gemara discusses the question of, in their times, they assumed that the non-Jews around them, or some of the non-Jews around them, if they had the opportunity, would kill Jews surreptitiously just because they hated Jews. And therefore, the Gemara of Orazar talks about the possibility that we're not allowed to take medical treatment from non-Jews. Now, this is obviously not true of our time. It's not a reality that's relevant to us, at least in America, where there are laws about these things, and where we don't worry about these things, and where our interactions are of a very different nature. But it comes up as an interesting question in our discussion, because the Gemara says that if the person is certainly going to die, then you can go to them for healing. Why can you go to them for healing? Because the worst that the doctor would do is surreptitiously kill the patient. But if the patient is certainly going to die anyway, then you don't have to worry about it. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. The doctor might kill him right away, and this illness would take some time to kill him. And we in Judaism generally value what's called chaye sha'ah. Chaye sha'ah are a short period of life. So you know, if all other things being equal, if somebody is terminally ill and there is a treatment that would extend his life 2 weeks and it wouldn't cause him extra pain and it wouldn't cause any troubles. So however it would work. I mean, it's just a theoretical case. It would not cause the patient pain or trouble or anything like that. It would just be a procedure, and then this person would get extra time. So halakhically, we're required to take that procedure because we're required to live. Similarly, if somebody is terminally ill and we know there's nothing we can do about it, and they want to live as much as they can, and it's a Shabbos, and so, and they, and they, and they're, and there's some danger that we can remove. So again, they'll live for another 2 weeks, or 5 hours, or 10 hours. So that too is considered a time of pikuach nefesh, and we're allowed to violate Shabbos for that as well. So in many cases, we do care in halacha about chayei sha'ah. But the Gemara here says l'chayei sha'ah lo chayshinan. That in this case, if you're going to gamble away some chayei sha'ah, some temporary life, for the possibility of a longer term cure, that you're allowed to do. So in other words, you're going to go to in their days a doctor. And going to a doctor was somewhat of a crapshoot because the doctor might decide to surreptitiously kill the Jew. But the Jew already has an illness that will kill him anyway. So the illness might kill him in a month, and the doctor might kill him in a day. Mar says you don't have to worry about that. If you know you're going to die from the illness, you can risk it. So Mar says, how do we know this, that we don't worry about these things? It quotes our discussion that Gehazi and his sons, in Chazal's reading of it, Gehazi and his sons say to each other, if we stay here, if we go into the city, we're going to die of famine. If we stay here, we're going to die. So let's go to the Aramean camp. And if we go to the Aramean camp, so if they kill us, they kill us, but if they let us live, they let us live. And so the same question. Dying of famine would take them a few days, maybe a few months, or maybe a few weeks, depending on how serious the famine was. But dying from the Arameans would be right away. So therefore, the Gemara proves this. So this is a matter of halachic import about what kinds of risks we can take. Same question. Let's suppose somebody has a terminal illness, and there's a risky treatment that might give them months of life, but might kill them right away. And if they don't take the treatment, they'll have, you know, so the risky treatment might give them 8 months of life, or permanent cure, but let's say 8 months of life even, but might kill them right away. And if they don't take the treatment, they'll only have 4 months to live. So the halacha is you're allowed to take the treatment and risk it based on this Gemara. That highlights this complex picture of Gehazi and his sons as well, because Chazal are deriving halacha from this. Theoretically, you could have said that they're mitzoraim, they're Gehazi and his sons. Who knows whether they were careful about halacha? But the Gemara assumes that the Tanakh's reporting it means it is a right way of thinking about it in some way, and that means that despite Gehazi being as evil as we've seen him to be, so going to Naaman when he shouldn't have, perhaps keeping students away from Elisha when he shouldn't have, despite all of those things, he's well enough in tune with halacha that he knows this halacha and he follows this halacha. So people aren't necessarily one thing or the other, and Gehazi is not either. Pasuk Hey, Vayakumu Baneshef, Lavoel Machane Aram, Vayavod Ktze Machane Aram, Vine In Shamish. They get up, Baneshef means it's still dark. So they get up, and this word is going to appear again, so it's worth paying attention to, it's worth noting, right? It's at the night. They get up at the night, Baneshef, to go into Machane Aram, and they come to the edge of Machane Aram, and there's nobody there. There's nobody there. So why is there nobody there? So the pasuk goes back now to tell us why there's nobody there. Pasuk Vav says, "V'Hashem hishmiya et machane aram kol rechev kol sus kol chayil gadol." Hashem, this is just an example of how simple it is if you're God, if you have miraculous powers, how simple it is to cause things to happen. Hashem doesn't make an actual army come. Hashem hishmiya et machane aram kol rechev kol sus, the sounds of chariots and horses and of a great army. So they jumped to the conclusion that the kings of the Jews had hired other kings and other armies, the Chittim and the Mitzrim, meaning mercenaries, to come and attack them. So they get up and they flee in the dark. Vayazvut ahalehem, they leave their tents, vetsusehem, vechamorehem, machaneka sherhi, vayanusuel nafsham. They leave everything. Their tents, their horses, their donkeys, the whole thing. They just run for their lives. They run for their lives. So, notice again the word baneshef, right? That's a key term here in the discussion, although it's not explained why that is. Now, you could just say, well, it was just, that was when Hashem chose to do it. That was when Hashem decided he wanted to do it. I wonder though, another possibility, again, fairly technical, would be to say that if it had been light outside, they would have heard the noises, but they would have looked and seen that there was nobody coming, and therefore, they wouldn't have had to run. So it's possible that the only reason is to explain why it would be that Hashem had to do it then to to make it plausible that when they heard the noise, even though they couldn't see anything, they would assume there's a big, huge army coming, and therefore would have to flee and to run away. But I also wonder whether there's not a lesson in here about the fact that Hashem does things sometimes in the hidden, and you don't even know them at all, meaning Gehazi, either the four Mitzrayim are waking up by Neshef, so everything's dark, they have no idea what's going on. The people of Shimron are sleeping, perhaps restlessly because they're hungry, because they're starving, but they're sleeping, and Hashem's taking care of things, and Hashem's taking care of it in a dark kind of way where nobody knows what's going on, nobody sees what's happening. And there are a lot of times when we think that the world is going on in a certain way, and maybe an upsetting way, and Baneshef, when it's dark, when we don't know what's going on, Hashem's working it all out for us, and maybe that would be another reason to have it happen now, so that nobody knows it as it happens, to recognize that Hashem operates a lot of times behind the scenes in ways that we don't know, we don't realize. So, they get to the edge of the camp, and they get to one tent, and they find food and drink. So what do? And they eat and they drink. They come to a tent, and there's nobody there, so they eat and they drink, and they take gold and silver and gold and clothing, and they hide it somewhere, they bury it, and they go to another tent, and they do the same thing, and they take from there, and they bury it. So they're sort of putting away riches for themselves. They say, you know what, we're not doing the right thing. Once they've emptied two tents, so they've gotten, I think, plenty of wealth for themselves, they say, this is not right. This is a day of news. We're just staying silent. And if we stay until light, when, what will happen at the light? The people of Shimron will be able to look out to the camp and see it. Umitza'anu avon. We will be found with sin. That's Chazal or Rashi and Radak. I don't think it means Matza'anu avon from Hashem. They mean that the people will be angry with us in Shamron. So if you read it that way, it means that it wasn't that they had a real attack of conscience. It's that they had a real attack of worry about how the society around them would treat them unless they had made sure to report this before it was found out on its own, because then they would be getting in trouble. So they say we have to go and treat it. So, two ways of reading the Pesukim. You could read them as having had an understanding that they should do something. They should, in fact, report it. Or you could say, no, they never had that understanding. They were just worried about their own hides, and therefore they did it. So anyway, Pasuk Yud, Vayavo'u Vayikru'u El Sho'er Ha'ir. They come to the gatekeeper. Vayagidu Lahem Le'mor Banu El Machaneh Aram. And they say to them, saying, we came to the Aramean camp. V'nein Sham Ish. There's nobody there. The kol adam, and there's no voice of any human. Ki im asus asur, the horses are tied to their post. Vachamor asur, and the donkeys are tied. Vohalim kasherim, and the tents like they were. So this is big news. Vayikra shoarim vayagidu beit hamelach pnima. So the shoarim go and they tell it to the king's court on the inner court. Pasuk yed bet vayakom hamelach lados. The king wakes up. Vayimer levadav, and he says to his servants, his advisors, who people sitting around him, vayagidan lachem et asher asur lanam aram. He says this is a problem. I'll tell you what the Arameans are doing. They know how hungry we are. And they go out of the camp. They're hiding in the fields around the camp. Saying, when they go out of the city, when they go out of the city, we'll catch them alive and then we'll conquer the city. This is reminiscent of what the Jews actually did to the people of Ai in the Sefer Yehoshua, although it's not mentioned here. So that's what they're worried about. They're suspecting an ambush. That is a trick. So one of the servants says, take five of the remaining horses. We're going to see in a second, there are not so many remaining horses because of this deep famine in Shamron, that are left. It's like almost all of the wealth, all of what the Jewish people have left. So take those five horses, like the Jews have already died in the famine, already been hurt by the famine, and let's send after them and see what the story is, meaning we'll risk them and we'll see what's going on. So they take two, meaning they take his advice, but they're not willing to risk all five. So Pasuk Yidal, Vayichu Shnei Rechav Susim, Vayishlach HaMelech Acharei Machane Aram Lemor. So the king says, you know what, so go trail them go Shalem and see what the story is and see where they were. So Pasuk Ted Vav, Vayelchu Acharehem Ad HaYarden, they follow them all the way to the Jordan, so that's pretty far. I mean, Kol HaDerech, and the whole path, it's strewn Mlea Bigadim V'Kelim, with clothing and with vessels, with pots, with pans, with any kind of items. Asher Yishluchu Aram B'Chofzam, the Arameans threw away in their rush. Vayashuv HaMalachim V'Yegidu LaMelech. So this madcap dash is striking to watch. You have to wonder about what could the sound of the horses and the sound of the armies all the way to the Jordan following them have been that would make them continue to run and to continue to throw things off in their haste. So that's something that I don't even when I play the movie of Tanakh in my mind, I don't quite see why they wouldn't stop and turn around. So it's dark and therefore they can't. So that's what you have to assume, that it's dark and they're just bothered by it's haunting, it's scary in the dark, and they're running, and they assume that they're going to die, and therefore they give up everything. They're just trying to get away. So now that they know this, and they've fallen all the way to the Jordan, they have some confidence that in fact, the Arameans have abandoned their camp. It's also Eretz Yisrael is a fairly big place if you're only walking around on foot, and yet it seems clear that even in their times, there were sort of accepted roads and paved paths. And if those paths were clear, then it's clear that the people, that there are no other people there. Meaning, why couldn't it be that the Arameans had gone to someplace off the beaten track, off the well-known path, and were hiding there? And maybe even had strewn clothing and things as a trick? So apparently not. Apparently, everyone understood that you either took this road or you didn't take this road, and you didn't go anywhere else, even in the dark. So they come back and they tell the king. In this case, it was certainly true. Pasuk Tetzayin, Vayetze Ha'am, Vayavozu et Machane Aram. And so they pillage, they take from Machane Aram, and Machane Aram was well stocked. So they're going to get truly a large amount, a sudden influx of a huge amount of food. I don't want to mention also one more interesting Gemara in Bava Kamma that says the following. It says, Ra'av Ba'ir, Tana Rabbanan, Ra'av Ba'ir, Pazir Rachlecha. If there's a famine in your city, move. Pazer Lecha means let your legs walk. So how do they know this? So they get it from Breishit. Vayirav Bahar, Vayirav Avram Mitzrayim. So you see that Avram, and again, Avram has a promise from Hashem. Avram was told, go out of your land, and you'll go to Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to give you the land. I'm going to give you children. Everything's going to be good. And yet there's a famine. What does Avram do? Why doesn't he just sit there and say, well, Hashem can provide for me. Hashem promised me. So the Gemara is saying, that's what you're learning. Even Avram, and very few of us are of the level of Avram, and even Avram, when he's faced with a famine, he moves to a place where there's food. Yaakov Avinu certainly does it, and then the Gemara says, Ve'omer, and it also says, Imamainu nevo ha'ir, v'aram v'ir v'matnu sham, that these four mitzaraim, another example of them being used as an example for these four mitzaraim, let's go. So the Gemara says, so why do we need the second pasuk? The Gemara says, because you might have thought you only move when you don't have to worry about your life, right? That's only when there's no nefashot issue. So that's a kind of weird thing, because Avram sort of has a nefashot issue because he's worried about Sarah and being killed for her. But that's not just a general killing, that's a killing in terms of that, and he could have avoided that. So that's only where he could be reasonably confident that he wouldn't get killed. But if you were worried that you were going to get killed, maybe then you should sit tight in whatever city you are and trust in Hashem. And the Gemara says, no, that's not what you do. And that's what Gehazi and the other Mitzorahim show us. Another striking lesson being learned from Gehazi, that when there's times of trouble, when there's times of famine, it's our job to handle them right. And handling them right means learning our lesson from them and doing what we're supposed to do, meaning moving somewhere and going to where we can go. So now the people come out by Avozo Machane Aram, and they pillage the Machane Aram, so they have all of a sudden all the food that they could use, anything that they would want, by Hisa'asilad B'Shekel, so times Sorim B'Shekel Gidvar Hashem, so the prices drop dramatically, because they all of a sudden have all the food they need, and the prices go back to their regular level, even perhaps a depressed, a lower level, as Hashem had said. Pasuk Yudzayin. The Hamelech Yifkid HaShalish HaShinish Anal Yado, that guy from yesterday, the Shalish, who had mocked what Elisha had said, and who the king rests his hands on this man, had put him al hashar. He had made him in charge of the gate, meaning trying to control the traffic so there wouldn't be a riot when people are trying to get out to Aram, to the camp, to get their booty, to get their loot. Vayamisuhu ha'am bashar vayamot. And so the people trampled him. There was a stampede for all the food. They had been starving, so it's understandable there would be a stampede. Not right, but understandable. They trampled him to death. Kasher diber ish alokim asher diber bereden ha'melech elav. As the ish alokim had said, when the king had come down to Elisha to talk to Elisha, and Elisha said to the, had said, the price will go down, and this man had mocked him. Elisha said, Vahi, so I was going to remind us of what it said. When he had been talking to the king, saying that two se'ah of se'orim will be a shekel, and one se'ah of sol will be a shekel, run this, let be in the gates of Shimon tomorrow this way. Vayan hashalish et isha lokim vayomar v'nei Hashem osa arubot b'shamayim hayeked v'arzeh vayomar hincha ro'eh b'inecha misham lo tochel. He says, you'll see it with your eyes and you won't eat it. You might try to wonder, and it might be a structural thing within the parak, it might be a literary device, but you might wonder why the pasuk feels the need in the same parak. So parakim don't matter to us, but in the same general vicinity of text to repeat the whole story, right? Because it's only 18 psukim ago that we had the actual incident. So there is a break in the text. You might have just said that. Or it might be the pasuk just wants to emphasize the story for us to make us realize that this is the actual fulfillment of what Elisha had said. That's not always so easy to notice. Even if Elisha had said it and it came true exactly that way, there are always or often going to be people who will say, well, that doesn't have to have been the fulfillment of what Elisha said. It might have been another, it was just a stampede of people. God never predicted a stampede. He just said the guy will get killed. But that's not necessarily a fulfillment of it. So Pasuk Chaf, Vahi lo kein, the Pasuk says, it happened exactly that way. The people trampled him in the gates of the city, and he died. So the Gemara has a discussion of this for a reason that I'll get to in a second. But the Gemara says, well, maybe this isn't a fulfillment of Elisha's, of what Elisha is a fulfillment of Elisha promised, but maybe not for the reason you might have thought, but it's just because Elisha cursed him this way. And the Gemara says, no, and that's for another principle. Yehuda Marav said, if a Chacham curses you, it's going to come true even if there wasn't really a good, valid reason for the cursing. Nonetheless, the curse will come true. So maybe that was going on here. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true, because it says, Vayimisu Vayamot Bashar. So since it stresses that it was Bashar, the Vayimisu Otoham Bashar, so the Gemara there says, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Sadi Amud Bet. The Gemara says, Sadi Amud Aleph, sorry. The Gemara says, that shows you that it was because of his whole discussion of the Shaar. The Gemara uses this for a principle that is often rejected in many, many circles, and therefore worth, I think, emphasizing at every opportunity. The Gemara says, the Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, Amar Rav Yonatan, Minayin Shekol Midotav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Midah Kenek Midah. How do you know that when God punishes, and when God does things, it's always midah kenek midah, one thing reflecting another, that it reflects exactly what it was, and they quote our discussion, because Elisha says to him, tomorrow you mocked the whole idea of the reduction in prices, therefore you'll see it, but you won't benefit from it. And then the question is, well, maybe that's because Elisha cursed him, and the answer is no. It's because that's the way God punishes. So this idea of midah kenek midah, it's a crucial idea in our understanding of the way the world works. One of the things that we're supposed to notice throughout Malachim is that what the Nevi'im were striving for was to get people to recognize that God's hand really does function in the world. So it's easier when you have Nevi'im around pointing it out to you, even though it's not ironclad, because we've seen contests between Nevi'im, we've seen different Nevi'im have competing predictions, and the people don't know who to follow. So it's not ironclad, it's not simple even then. And it's certainly not simple at another time. So the Gemara says that there's another clue to how Hashem operates in the world, that everything that Hashem does is midah kenege midah. Now, it may not be always simple to know which things Hashem is doing at all. That's a hard question, right? Depending on your belief in providence and how providence works, how Hashgacha works. So you can go from one extreme to extreme. And the Rambam is one to think that direct Hashgacha is relatively compared to others, is relatively minimal. So you wouldn't always know. So if somebody gets a certain punishment, they wouldn't necessarily know. Here you know it because Elisha predicted it. But let's say somebody today has something go wrong for them. or right for them? How do they know when it's a punishment, when it's a reward? How do they know when it's just the way the world works? Complicated question. But the principle needs to be established, needs to be understood, that when God punishes somebody, it's midah keneged midah. So if somebody were to have something bad happen to them, and they were to decide that it was from Hashem, that it was hashkacha from Hashem, and it wasn't just... So the Rambam, for example, believes that sometimes, let's say, disease can be the ordinarily natural breakdown of a physical body. Physical bodies are prone to breakdown, so disease might be an ordinary natural breakdown. It doesn't necessarily have to be from Hashem. But if somebody had a disease, and they thought it was from Hashem, then it seems like the Gemara is saying, it's midah keneged midah, and you should be able to do some kind of calculus. A lot of people today will just throw up their hands and say, well, you can never forget what Hashem wants. And that's one of the reasons I noticed this Gemara, is the Gemara is saying exactly not that way. If you get a punishment, you have to establish that it is a punishment. You have to establish that it is from Hashem. Like, you can't always do that. But if something is a punishment, it's a midah keneged midah, and therefore, it should plausibly be able to be, to figure out what it relates back to and what it's a function of, and therefore have some ability to know this. It's easiest with Elisha because he predicts it and he points the finger at it. But the Gemara gets a much broader principle from there, midah keneged midah. So we close our perek, fairly brief perek, but it establishes for us several important principles and ideas of the faith. There's Gehazi and his sons, there's Mitzrayim, there's Hashem operating by Neshef, and then crucially, there's Hashem operating midah keneged midah with this officer of the king, who the king had formerly leaned on him for support. His death establishing for us this principle in general, that when Hashem operates in the world, Hashem operates midah keneged midah. Have a great day.